You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, we've completed our civic duty and we voted, and I feel really good about that.
I really enjoyed the experience because, you know, we've always voted in California, and this is our first time voting as Texicans in the Republic of Texas, and it was an enjoyable and interesting experience.
It was, well, the first thing that you have to love is that they require your ID, and they actually check it very thoroughly and ask for your address and make sure that the address is the one that is on the ID, and I really like that.
Well, they had to double check mine because I've got law enforcement ID, right? So I have a restricted address, and they had to just double check to make sure that I lived where I really do live.
Yeah.
And not at the courthouse.
But that's a good thing because, you know, this is what every state should do, Ron, and it's frustrating as heck to me that it doesn't happen in every state. This is a privilege that we have as citizens of the United States. Thousands and thousands of people that are not citizens are voting. And, you know, just look, and we talked about this before, at the DMV in California, who sent voter registration forms to
22,000 non-citizens, and I think that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, and not only did they send them to them, but they pre-checked the boxes for them that said that they were United States citizens.
Which is actually a crime. I believe it's a felony.
Well, and it should be a felony, and whoever sent those out should go to jail. But this is just rampant across the country, and some estimates from the last election, I think that you showed me, said that
5.6 million.
Yeah. So that is a lot of votes that should never be cast in our country. And just by doing what Texas does and checking the voter that is voting, that it is that person, and that that person is a United States citizen, makes all the difference.
I'll tell you what, I was so impressed. And we went on the very first day, the morning of the very first day of the early voting, the parking lot to the polling place that we go to, and it's a big parking lot.
And we live in a very small town.
And it was packed. As a matter of fact, there was literally a line out the door. The constable had to direct traffic in and out of that parking lot, and when we walked in there, there were no less than six voter volunteers that were all checking ID, and they all had little computers in front of them. You had to present your Texas driver's license. You know, that's the form of ID that they want you to have. And I thought it was a wonderful experience. I think you and I were out of there in 10 minutes. Okay, part of that was just going through the vetting process, which was very quick and very efficient. And then we actually voted electronically this time, which is the first time that I personally voted electronically.
Yeah, because in California, we always had those punch machines. So this was electronic, and it was actually much easier and much faster. And, it was a great experience, and I always feel really good when I vote. So, you know, I'm hoping that everybody that we know votes. I have certainly called the kids and said, make sure that you vote. And, of course, you know, they do, but I always want to make sure. It's funny because my dad did that to me for years and years and years, and I guess I carried on the tradition.
Well, you know, I got a hold of all of our friends in Texas to make sure that they were going out and voting early, if not on the day of voting. But, you know, let's go back to that 5.6 million people that that did not vote legally, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And let's talk about the hundreds of thousands of dead people, right, that have voted.
Mm-hmm. And felons.
And felons mm-hmm. that have voted. And, I mean, there's just so much shenanigans going on. This is really the only way that the Democratic Party can win. And I am absolutely disgusted with the fact that 140 140 Congress people, all of them Democrats, voted against the bill to mandate voter ID in the United States. And you know what? I don't know the legalities of it, but President Trump ought to make an executive decision, if that's legally possible, to make sure that every single state and territory in the United States where we have United States citizens are voting with ID.
Well, I wish that he could make an executive order, and he should if he can. Now, the thing that's also happening, though, see, Texas had to go to court. They were taken to court over their voter ID, and they won. Now, a lot of other states have the same situation, and you get these activist judges who decide that somebody's going to be discriminated against. And I'll tell you what, the only people discriminated against when you don't have voter ID is we American citizens, because we are being discriminated against. This is our right, and it's being hijacked from us.
And it's our country, and yes, it is being hijacked. And just the other day, and I don't remember the name of the judge, and I don't remember the jurisdiction, but he blocked the voter ID because he said, well, it's too complicated, and young voters wouldn't understand it. Let me tell you what, if you don't understand the voting process, you shouldn't be voting. And I didn't find it to be complicated whatsoever. You walk in there, you give them your Texas ID, driver's license ID, and guess what? They sign you off on a computer. They click you in, so to speak, and you go right to the polling booth. You do your polling, do your voting, and you're out of there. So don't tell me it's overly complicated.
Every young voter knows how to use a cell phone with every function that it has, and an Xbox with every function that it has. They can certainly follow a voting
rule. Just one of those liberal judges legislating from the bench, and that kind of crap has got to stop.
Well, and that's why Jeff Sessions is fighting against that so much lately.
Well, it's late in the evening, and Dr. Ron and Linda and Desi Dog on the road in the RV. And tonight, we're in New Mexico, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and we're camped out and doing our show, and it's raining outside. We can feel the rain beating on the rooftop, and we had a nice dinner, and now we're finishing it off with a nice cup of coffee.
Yes. And it is pouring. Otherwise, I would still be driving.
No, I know you're stuck.
I wanted to get further, but it just is too dangerous on the road. And this was an interesting drive. We've had so many different weather conditions on this drive. We're on the 10 freeway, going from Texas to California, and it takes us 2 days. And we've had hail, we've had rain, we've had, you name it.
And this time we got fog.
We got fog. We've never had fog before.
That's right.
And that was, sometimes the fog was very, very thick. So, with those big trucks on the road, it's a little bit scary.
Well,
the one thing I will say is driving on the 10, for people who haven't done it, through Texas is really a great experience, because the road is absolutely perfect. It's a very well-maintained
road.
Not
like California roads.
No. We can tell when we go over a state line, because the roads become dramatically different in the different states. But it's a nice drive, and it's well worth doing.
Well, topography-wise, if you take that 10, from the San Antonio area, which is where we left, and heading out and going all the way across Texas, and New Mexico, will be in Arizona tomorrow morning, you just see such diversity of America, right?
Oh, it's
and
beautiful.
What they call the flyover states,
it's,
right?
There's so much empty, beautiful, natural space. And that's what I love about it. And the topography is different along the way. A lot of desert, but also a lot of plateaus. And it's a nice drive.
And did you notice how green and beautiful it was in Texas?
Well, that's because we have had weeks and weeks of rain in Texas.
No, not weeks and
yes,
weeks
and weeks
rain.
Of rain we've had.
Our rivers are full and our lakes are full.
Yes,
and I love that.
Yeah, but it's a nice drive, and I enjoy it every time we do it. It's a little bit different each time.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we came through El Paso, which is always a pain in the butt, I don't care what time of the day or night, you travel through El Paso, the traffic is horrendous. But it's right across the border, literally on the 10 going through El Paso. You can see the wall. which isn't,
as it is.
Such as it is, and it's not tall enough, President Trump. And you're looking into Juarez, Mexico. And I've got to be honest with you, you're actually driving. I'm looking out the window, and I'm trying to find that 15,000-plus person caravan of Guatemalans, Hondurans, MS-13 gang members, sex traffickers, drug traffickers, you name it, coming across the border. And what do you think, Linda, from everything that we've seen on television, tell me this is not a logistically organized assault on our country.
Well, let's break this down. This many people, I think it started out as, what did it start, 4,000?
400. No, 400, and the next day it got to 4,000.
Well, however many it started. So the number I remember is 4,000. So 4,000 people don't just decide as a group all together to get up and start walking to the United States. That just doesn't happen. It's logistically impossible, especially people from two different countries, Guatemala and Honduras. And then you add in people from Mexico along the way. So somebody has organized this, and oh my gosh, who could that be? It's obviously this was planned, and it was planned in time for the election. I mean, this is very strategically done. But the funny thing is, as usual, it's backfiring because people are upset about it, and it's really causing a lot of Republicans to go to the polls.
Well, I'm telling you what, they have a lot to be scared about, okay? Because there is no way, unless we call in our military and Trump does some sort of super negotiation with Mexico, there is no way that ICE and Border Patrol can hold back the masses, literally the masses of people that are going to literally storm our borders. And let me tell you what, when was the last time you saw illegal aliens in mass wearing reflectorized traffic vests and carrying flags? All right, so you tell me that this is not an army. Where are those reflectorized traffic vests coming from?
Well,
where are those flags coming
sure.
from? You know, and I'm going to tell you what, this is just speculation. I'm just going to speak as an old law enforcement dog. I think that once they get somewhere between 50 to 70 miles out, I think all of a sudden a whole bunch of buses and a whole bunch of trucks are suddenly going to show up out of nowhere and get all those people to the border toot sweet to take us by surprise. You watch. I'll bet you're going to see that.
Well,
so who's paying for all those buses, and who's paying for all those trucks?
Who's feeding all these people, and who's giving them water and bedding and so forth for the night? This obviously is a whole big setup. The other thing is that this year, nearly 400,000 people have been apprehended at the border, and that's 90,000 more than last year. So the numbers are a 21% increase in unaccompanied minors attempting to cross that border, and a 42% increase in families were apprehended attempting to cross the border. So nearly a third of all the people at the border that are apprehended were families and children, and that's about 157,000 of the 395,000.
Well, you know, I know that there was a couple of border crossing areas in Texas, and they had seen, I was listening to the Border Patrol guys talk, the chiefs, and they said there was a 300% increase from this time last year.
Well, another statistic is that most of the unaccompanied minors and the family units who were apprehended are from Guatemala. And so there's a lot of these children and families are from Honduras and from Guatemala. And that's a little bit different than before. You know, we had a lot of people coming in from Mexico. On this particular so-called caravan that's going through Mexico now, the numbers have swelled dramatically. And that's because they're picking up people along the way in Mexico. And, you know, I saw this one guy said how well-dressed these Hondurans were. Another Mexican guy said that he was mowing his lawn and the the caravan passed him, so he decided to drop the lawnmower and join them and go to the promised land.
Well, I'm going to tell you what.
I don't know what's going to happen when all these people hit Texas, and this is a disaster for the people in Texas, and it's a disaster for everybody in America, because these people will spread out all over, and they will be a further drain on the system. They're not, these people are not the best of them all coming with great job skills and things to offer America. There are people coming to take from America. Certainly some of them may be people that didn't have a good life in Honduras, but there's people all over the world who don't have a good life. We can't support them all.
You know, there's so many things to be concerned about. You know, one way to look at it is that these are 15,000 Democratic voters, right? 15,000 Democratic voters coming across because no voter ID in some of these states, especially California. But one of the things that really bothers me, sweetheart, and that is nobody is vetting them medically. All right? So you take a look at, now we've got polio again in the United States. Where the heck did that come from? All right? Now we've got typhus.
Typhus, yes.
Big typhus outbreak in Los Angeles. Where did that come from? Now, they're saying it's, you know, homeless people. What? But a lot of illegal aliens are homeless people. Look at all of the diseases and things that come into this country when you do not vet the people. If you remember, in our own family's immigration history, coming into the United States, your family from Holland, my family from Italy, they had to go through Ellis Island, and there was a complete medical staff there vetting every single person and quarantining those people who were ill that had different diseases. You cannot allow this type of medical issue to come into the country unchecked.
Well, they've already found people within this group that are part of MS-13. They've already found people within this group that are
Middle Easterners. Terrorists, by the way, out of El Paso. They caught 6 Yemeni terrorists just about a week ago.
And they also caught a terrorist that was wanted for murder that was sneaking in. And there also are a number of small children with people that are not their parents. Are these small children coming to the United States to be trafficked for human trafficking?
Of course.
I mean, we really need to be looking at this. And this, the Democrats are silent on this, Ron.
Shame on these Democrats and these rhino Republicans and their cowardice for not taking care of these loopholes. This is a long-term problem that started long before President Trump and Obama and George Bush.
But none of them did anything about
it. Not a single one.
I'm going to refill your coffee, and I have a few more words to say.
That's fantastic. I'm waiting for the coffee.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
A let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hey, well, thanks for the coffee. I appreciate it.
You are most welcome. You had mentioned the politicians not doing anything about this immigration problem, and this is a big deal to me. They are in that position because we put them in the position to serve the people of America, to protect the people of America, and they are failing us miserably. This has been an ongoing battle for years and years and years with this immigration issue. And we did vote President Trump in to build the wall, and they refused to give him the funding. But the holdup in the Congress and the Senate on this, where they cannot come to some agreement and do something, is absolutely ludicrous to me.
Well, you know, the resistance to this whole immigration issue is ongoing and on many different levels. All right, so, you know, we have the judge that I just talked about that was legislating from the bench and saying, oh, you know, you don't want to have voter ID. I'm going to block the voter ID because it's too complicated, whatever. And then you have, you know, the Congress people. You've got senators, for God's sakes, that are pro-open borders. You know, it's amnesty, amnesty, amnesty. And you just can't keep doing this. The United States... You know, I know that there's people out there that are impoverished and they would love to come to the United States and, you know, give us your tired, your sick, you know, all of these people, you're poor. But that was then and this is now. And we can't sustain everybody that wants to come to the United States coming to the United States. We can't turn the country into a third world or second world country. And how we do this is we keep bringing people into this country that have no financial support, they have no language skills, they have no education, they've got no job skills, and then say, well, you know, we're just going to have you, you know, picking fruit or mowing people's lawns and things like that. You know, you just can't do that. To me, it's just wrong.
But then also they take the money that we put in from our working 14 hours a day, and they give them free education,
free medical care,
and all the things that we don't even get. And,
you know, they don't even get these things in their country.
No.
Okay.
And we certainly don't get them in their country.
And so, you know, who is going to pay for this? And it's always us that are going to pay for it. And all of the people that I talk to, like on Facebook or LinkedIn, that want, let's bring everybody in, not a single one of those people will take one family or a couple of these illegal aliens and sponsor them and have them living with their own family. It's all, let's bring them in, but I don't want any responsibility. These people have no skin in the game.
No, and that's why there are so many of them out on the street. And it's not doing their families or their children any good to be living that way. This is a disaster that did not need to be created, and it is created by our legislators not doing their job.
And you know what? And I've talked about this before because, you know, coming from a ranching family and understanding the Bracero program, which is probably going to be news to a lot of our friends, and certainly, you know, the younger kids don't know anything about the Bracero program. But that was a very successful agricultural program that the United States had with Mexico, where workers would come in, during the harvest, and they would get to stay with a work visa called a bracero visa, and they would come in and they would work for 3 months, and then they would go home. And then they would come back, and they'd work 3 months, and then they would go home. They could not stay in the country permanently. They could not bring family members with them. There was no type of lottery. There was no chain migration. They were not allowed to have any... and by the way, the farms and ranches would house them. They had to pay for their own food. But that was a very successful program that allowed them the utility of going back and forth to Mexico and bringing back money, not only to their family, but to prop up the infrastructure of Mexico. And, you know, we've forgotten all about how to do something successful that makes everybody happy.
Well, we have, and that was a successful program for us, not so much for the people that were working, because the one downfall of that program is that Mexico had...
Well, they stole from those people.
They stole from them,
okay.
Yes.
But you could have accountability,
sure,
in the United States, where they are getting paid just like any other worker, okay? And these days, see, we have things these days that we didn't have back in a bracero program. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have electronic transfers of money. You had to physically, in those days, you had to physically take the money back, okay? So then, of course, you're going to be met with robbers or corrupt police officials and
right,
things like that. These days, what they do, and they've been doing this for years now, is they get their money, they go to the cash place, and they wire transfer, like Western Union, and they wire transfer the money directly into Mexican accounts for the families. So they are assured to get paid, and the family is assured to share in the income of the worker.
Well, this is going to be interesting how this whole caravan plays out. And, you know, once they step across the border, they're going to be here and they're going to disappear into the system. And I don't know what we're going to do to stop that many people. But, you know, we're just going to keep our eyes on it and see what happens.
Well, good luck with that, because 90% of them never make their court dates.
Actually, it's higher than that. It's 2% that do make their court dates.
Oh, my God. So, like, 98
yeah,
don't make...
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about that fantastic rally that President Trump held in Houston. 100,000 people bought tickets.
Well,
for
no,
that,
they didn't buy tickets. They tried.
Oh, they tried to buy tickets.
They could only sell 18,000.
Okay. All right.
Right. Because the stadium only holds 18,000. And you
well,
and
I'm sure you're right because of that. How could you get 100,000 people in an 18,000 person stadium?
You and I were saying, I don't know why he didn't do it in Dallas, where they have a stadium that will hold a whole lot more people than 18,000. But either way, it was really a phenomenal rally.
And thousands waiting outside and watching on the jumbotrons and listening to the speech.
Yes, thousands
and
thousands outside. And you and I were supposed to have dinner with
Governor Abbott. Okay,
and
the same night.
The same night, and it got canceled at the last minute because Trump was coming to town and he needed to be there.
And we
which
actually,
we understand.
And we sure do. But we actually postponed our trip out to California so we could have dinner with the governor.
Right.
And that fell through. We were left with, you know, watching President Trump's speech and also, you know, Senator Ted Cruz and his speech on television, which, I mean, it was wonderful, but I would have rather been there with the governor.
Well, I would
or the president.
But I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed watching that speech. It was went on forever, and it was quite lively.
So let me entertain something here. Uh-huh. So President Trump packs the house, right? 18,000 people, thousands more outside watching, and poor Barack Obama. He goes to California, which is his very favorite state, because of all the libtards that are there, and he got barely 2,000 people at his rally. Let me tell you what, if you're in California and you're Barack Obama and the best you can do is maybe 2,000 people, Democrats are in serious trouble.
Well, how about that claim that our economic revival is his doing?
Oh, Obama, I swear to God, that guy's smoking dope. That man is delusional. they need to institutionalize that guy, because he said, well, you know, it going back to Bush, right? It's all Bush. You know, things were so horrible under the Bush administration that it took me 8 years to get it squared away, and now we are enjoying the fruits of all of my programs.
Well, I feel like that president took our country backwards in so many ways.
Like 50 years backwards.
Oh, in race relations, in economy, in regulations, in losing manufacturing. He just took our country backwards. And I have to tell you, I was for lunch. You took the dog for a walk. And I went into this little restaurant to grab us some food. And this is a very small town in Texas.
Ozona.
Yes, it's a very small town in Texas. It's just a...
maybe about 4,000 people.
If that, yeah. And this is a little Mexican restaurant there that we really like.
Was it Pepe's? Right?
Yes. Yeah. And I went in, and, you know, I just have never paid attention to the little case in the store where
they sell
things. But I noticed there was three or four kind of bobblehead figures of President Trump, but they weren't demeaning to President Trump. They were good figures, you know.
Kind of like those promotional products you make.
Yes, exactly. I can definitely make bobbleheads, but they were positive Trump statuettes, right? And then I noticed this one, and I bent down to look at it, and it was like a gargoyle. It was one of those devils with the wings crouching down, and it's got the big serpent tail, and the face was Obama, and there was a little sign on the front, and it said Obama, and I was kind of taken aback, because, you know, what we hear on the news, Ron, is always that the Hispanics are all Democrats. Well, these people who are of a Mexican family, and there are quite a few of them that work in the restaurant, and they always have the baby there, and, you know, the different family generations there.
And by the way, the food at Pepe's, this is the second time we've eaten there, second or third time. Every single time, you cannot get a bad meal at Pepe's in Ozona.
No, it's a good place. But I was very surprised that they were very, very pro-Trump. And I can't speak for them. I would assume that they are not pro something like this caravan coming over the border, because these people, they work hard. And, you know, it kind of flies in the face of what the media tells us again about how Mexican people in America feel about immigration.
Well, you remember earlier this year, we were at our place in Puerto Vallarta, and we spent, because we have so many Mexican friends there, we spent a lot of time, you know, talking with the people, talking with our friends. And by the way, not only just our friends, but taxi cab drivers, waiters, people that we ran into. And I was amazed that, first of all, we couldn't find a person that didn't like President Trump, and nobody was angry about the wall, and everybody was saying, hey, we have our own problems in Mexico at our southern border, i.e. the Guatemalans, right? The San Salvadorians, the El Salvadorians, sometimes Panamanians, and the Hondurans coming across the southern part of the Mexican border. And what they do when they come into Mexico is they take jobs from indigenous Mexican citizens.
Well, and they have the same type of laws that we have, or we should have, there, that you cannot just enter their country illegally.
You just
and
can't
you
do
will,
anything
you
there.
You will be arrested.
You can't
there.
Do anything there illegally. You try to get a driver's license in Mexico. You know, in California, they just give you a driver's license. In Mexico, you got to have two forms of identification. You've got to have righteous birth certificate. You've got to have all sorts of stuff to get a Mexican driver's license.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand why we don't. I don't understand the whole catch and release thing on the immigration, and I don't understand why we don't put them back on a bus and send them back into Mexico. I just don't understand that.
Well, we've got to deal with that, and hopefully we're going to see a red wave instead of a blue one, and maybe this is the start of something new for the United States, going to new heights.
Did you see again that the Republicans are being harassed when they're out with their family in restaurants?
Are you referring to Mitch McConnell in the restaurant?
Mitch McConnell and Kirstjen Nielsen also this week was harassed, you know, just relentlessly and rudely by people just screaming at them while they're trying to be out with their family.
You know, I've been watching these stories on television, sweetheart, and I can't believe the Democratic spokesholes and the strategists are just getting behind this. And I think almost encouraging it. They're saying, hey, these are public officials, and it's fair game. We catch them in public places. Wait a minute. You know, I get it if the guy's on the street and he's walking around the street and you've got something you want to say and you want to pitch a bitch. But the guy and his family are having, you know, dinner at a restaurant, and you come in and harass him while he's having dinner, he and his wife. And it's the same thing with Secretary Nielsen. You harass these people. Yes, they're in public, but they're in restaurants. And then, you know, you forward that. You encourage people to do something like that.
And this is a one-way street. The Republicans are not doing this to the Democrats.
No, this is the whole Hillary Clinton and Maxine Waters incivility movement. And it's just disgraceful. And it's another thing that is ticking people off, because where does it stop? And, you know, we talked about ticking time bombs.
Yep.
And it's just going to take a little bit more of this, and somebody is going to go in there, and they're going to explode, and a lot of people are going to get hurt.
I think so. Hey, just for a change, there was this guy at the Laker and Spurs game who, at halftime, they let him shoot from midcourt for a basket, and if he got the basket, he'd get $30,000, and he sunk that ball right in the basket.
You're kidding me.
And he was so excited, and he's jumping around, and he went over to LeBron James to give him a high five, and they wouldn't let him near the Laker bench to give a high five. How stupid is that?
Well, I could tell you what.
How cocky are they?
it's not PBR, and they're not bull riders, because the bull rider would give him a high five and probably put him on his back or something and take
this
him around in a circle.
This guy, just a civilian, sunk the ball from
and plus he's a big fan, okay?
Oh, yeah.
He's a big fan. Give the guy some credit. Hey, I'll take the $30,000 for sinking a mid-court shot, but at least, you know, give the guy a little kudo.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but that's a great story. He's $30,000 richer. God bless him.
Yep, he didn't need the handshake anyway.
I'll take the money every time.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
You know, Ron, how we often talk about, you know, if you see something, say something, if you feel something's out of place and you need to report it, then do so. And too many people don't do that. And there's a story about a lady that did that, and just look at the difference she made in so many people's lives. So this lady, Coberly Bull, she lives in New Jersey, and she is a white woman, and she has three biracial children. And somebody sent her a Facebook message calling her a wannabe black woman and telling her that he hoped her black children gets hung for you being so stupid.
You know, there's just a lot of hate out there.
There is a lot of hate out there. And she was worried for her children, so she contacted authorities. Good for her. Great first step. And good for the authorities, because they paid attention. And the person was three states away in Kentucky who sent her this message. So in the process of checking this out, Kentucky state officials went out and checked it out. And they found this man, 20-year-old Dylan Jarrell, and he had a firearm and more than 200 rounds of ammunition. And his intent was to be shooting at schools, two different schools in Kentucky.
I think he had plans for one of the schools too, right? Didn't he had diagrams of the school and things like that?
Well, I don't know everything. I think he did have diagrams, because they said that his intent was for two different school shootings.
Right, I think that's how they established intent, because they found him with the diagrams of the schools.
Yep. So here's a woman three states away who said something based on a message that gave her a very creepy feeling, and police, just absolutely kudos to them for actually taking it seriously and checking it out, and caught him, you know, in a position of imminent harm to other people.
No. Kudos.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know what, Ron? You being an old history teacher, you know, so many people anymore don't know anything about our U.S. history, right?
Oh, yeah. I talk about that from time to time.
So many. So, I'm going to test your history knowledge.
Oh, my God. You know I get test anxiety.
Well, let's just see how it goes. So, here's the first question. And, you know, I mean, people should really think about these answers, because they are our history. Okay? From what country did the U.S. gain its independence in the late 18th century? Was it Great Britain or Spain?
Of course it was Great Britain. And not once, but twice, right? So we had the Revolutionary War, and then we had the War of 1812.
Correct.
See?
Ding, ding, ding.
What'd you think about that?
Well, you're much smarter at history than I am, so. Which country was a member of the Axis during World War II, Sweden or Japan?
Well, there were three members of the Axis powers, all right? It was Nazi Germany, Fascist Italy, and Imperial Japan.
Oh, okay. So Japan is correct. The main members of the Axis were Japan, Germany, and Italy.
Ding,
look
ding.
At you! Which president stewarded the U.S. through the Civil War?
Will that be Abraham Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln? It is. Lincoln was president from 1861 to 1865 for the entirety of that conflict.
And he was assassinated.
And he was assassinated. And we've been to where he was assassinated.
Ford's Theater.
Yes. Little tiny place. Which general became emperor of France in the wake of the French Revolution?
Oh, that's easy. Napoleon Bonaparte.
Okay, let's see if you are correct. And ding, ding, ding again.
As emperor, a little tiny guy.
He was. Always wearing his hands somehow in his vest.
Holding
there.
Up his underwear, I think. Or maybe carrying concealed. You never know.
As Emperor Napoleon oversaw the greatest expansion of French territory in history.
And he was exiled to the island of Corsica in the Tyrrhenian Sea off the coast of Italy.
Well, I have to hand it to you, because I would never know that.
I know more.
Okay.
Okay. There was a investigation that led to his exhumation, and they believed that he was literally poisoned by arsenic.
Oh, that's, yes, I heard that.
Okay.
And I think he still had his hand in his shirt then. I don't know.
So that's the forensic side of me, Lynn. Cause of death, okay? Yep.
Which explorer is often erroneously credited with discovering North America in 1492?
Well, of course, being Italian, that would be Cristoforo Colombo. And he didn't get physically on the coast of the United States. Okay.
In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, as goes the schoolyard rhyme. Among Western European explorers, though, Amerigo Vespucci actually discovered the North American continent.
Correct. That's, we are named after him, as a matter of fact.
Your name is Amerigo?
No, my name's Vespucci, Linda. Oh.
Okay. Who was known as
There better be some sort of prize at the end of this.
Well, I'll have to think of one. Who was known as the Virgin Queen? Queen Elizabeth I or Queen Marie Antoinette?
Oh, no. Elizabeth I for sure.
And that is correct.
And Marie Antoinette was executed by guillotine, and her famous comment was, "Let them eat cake."
Yes.
And that was because she didn't care about the people, and the people did her in.
Yes. Well, Elizabeth I, the daughter of Henry VIII, never married, and thus was believed to have passed on a virgin.
Correct.
Okay. Who commanded the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia during the U.S. Civil War? That's an easy one.
Well, that was Robert E. Lee. And as a matter of fact, in our town, there is a little tiny house with a historical plaque that said that General Lee used to sleep there on his travels in Texas because, a lot of people don't know this, he, before he was the general for the Confederacy, he was also the general of the Army of Texas.
You know,
briefly,
just about Robert E. Lee, you know, he gets a whole lot of bad rap.
Exactly.
And he doesn't deserve it. And
no,
the reason that he gets it is because our people in America do not understand who he was and what he did and what he was about.
Correct.
And to take down his statues is a sin to me, because there's so much more to Robert E. Lee than the Confederate Army.
He was a phenomenal military strategist, graduated at the top of his class at West Point, and the guy that beat him, Ulysses S. Grant, who became a president of the United States. I believe he was our 17th president after Andrew Johnson, who was the vice president that took over after Abraham Lincoln, who was our 15th president, was assassinated. But a lot of people don't know that Arlington Cemetery is actually on the grounds of General Lee's residence. And they put that graveyard there to embarrass him. Okay, so he could always live knowing the deaths of Union soldiers that, you know, surrounded his premises.
And
he was a fascinating man.
He
by
was
the way.
A fascinating man. And Arlington is a place that everybody should visit once. It's absolutely a very spiritual and very patriotic feeling place.
Oh, I think there, you know, I've been to several of our national cemeteries in the United States, and there is nothing to compare with Arlington Cemetery. On one of our trips to Washington, D.C., we were lucky enough, because of you, to get us a driver whose brother is actually buried in Arlington. And he had special permission to be on the grounds, and he just took it to places that few people get to go and see.
Yeah.
So that was very nice, including we got to see, as many people have, but we got to actually watch the entire changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Yeah, that's
which
very
brings
moving.
A very moving, yeah. Almost brings a tear to your eye, actually.
It does, yeah. Well, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, John Adams or Thomas Jefferson?
No, John Adams wrote the Declaration of Independence, but Thomas Jefferson... Oh, wait a minute. No, you know what? It was actually Thomas Jefferson that wrote the Declaration of Independence, and he was the first signer on the Declaration of Independence, but John Adams, I believe, was one of the signatories.
Okay.
And he subsequently, as Jefferson, Adams became one of our presidents.
Yes, and Jefferson was the third president of the United States. And which American president was eliminated on November 22nd, 1963?
You mean assassinated?
Well, my test says eliminated, but I think that assassinated would be the proper word.
Well, the key thing for me is the date of November 22nd. All right, 1963, because that's when John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, in
yes.
the book depository, and you and I have both been there to the crime scene.
Yes. And in what year did the Spanish Armada occur?
Oh.
1742 or 1588?
Wait a minute. I believe it was in the 1500s, so it'd have to be 1588.
1588?
I know it wasn't in the 1700s.
Yeah, the British utterly decimated the Spanish Armada, okay. firmly establishing Britain as a formidable naval power for the next 400 years.
Now, you're getting in deep, Linda, because I'm a U.S. history guy. I'm not an international history guy.
And who rose to power in Germany in 1933?
Oh, that's easy. That was Adolf Hitler.
Yep.
Who became the Chancellor of Germany.
Yes, he did, after the National Socialist Party became the largest elected party in the German Reichstag.
Right, that's correct.
Okay, and I think last question.
Oh my gosh, I'm getting them all.
You got every one so far.
I better not choke.
Okay, whose elimination sparked the beginning of World War I?
Oh, I know that one. That's Archduke Ferdinand and... I'm trying to remember where he was assassinated. Was it in Belgrade? Boy, I don't know, but that's what started the whole thing.
Well, and he actually didn't directly cause that conflict, but it kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Correct.
And plunged Europe into chaos.
Correct.
So I could give you more, but we'll do that at another time.
So am I 10 for 10?
No, you are 12 for 12.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. What do I get?
That's excellent.
How about a kiss?
You got it. That's an easy prize. Well, I have a dog story, and it's not a funny dog story, but I think it's an interesting dog story. They did a study, I think it was done in Australia, about a dog's color. So a black dog, a brown dog, a yellow dog, a white dog. If their color of their coat is linked to how long they live. And they have found that it is linked to how long the dog lives and also their chance of serious illness. So they did the study on Labrador Retrievers because and that's a really popular dog in Australia. It's also one of the world's most popular canine breeds.
Well, because of one of the most friendliest dogs.
Oh, they are. And, you know, we've had several black labs.
Well, we had Bridget. Bridget was black. And then we had Tessa.
Tessa was black. The study found that chocolate labs live significantly shorter lives than black and yellow labs. And they don't exactly know why that is, but they also have a higher incidence of ear and skin problems. So I don't know what the reason is. I don't think that they know what the reason is, but what they're doing this study is to find out how they can prepare and make sure that they take care of the dogs. So the prevalence of the ear inflammation is twice as high, and they have four times more likely of a chance to suffer from some sort of skin condition or dermatitis.
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting because labs, and I've had labs all my life, they classically don't have either of those problems.
Well, the chocolate color is a recessive gene, and you have to have both parents have to be chocolate labs to have a chocolate lab, so maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But for whatever reason, they have more problems and they live less time. So the average life of the other two, the black and the yellow labs, are 11 plus years. And the average life for a chocolate lab is about 10 years and a few months.
Wow, that's so interesting. Because, you know, both of our black labs, Tessa and Bridget, lived to very ripe old ages.
Yeah, you know, Tessa was 17.
Right, and Bridget was, I think, about 18. And normally, they only last about 13, 14 years if you hunt them, right? Because, you know, hunting them, you know, eventually, like anything else, you know, kind of wears a dog out. I mean, they love it. They're built for hunting, but it just kind of wears them out.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it's just something that is useful information, because you and I were just talking about getting a chocolate lab. And we thought that the color was so pretty, but now maybe that's something that we might want to rethink to choose a dog that might have a healthier life and a longer lifespan.
Well, you know, just like all pet owners, you get so close to your dogs that they're family members, and you want the dog to live longer, because that's pretty traumatic for everybody to go through. You know, have a dog for 10 years and then it dies.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You want to have a dog as long as you can possibly have a dog. Like Max. How long did Max, last man standing, how long did that dog last?
The Minpin. He was 17 years also, okay. Which is a long time for a Minpin. But it's funny, just speaking of dogs, because Desi's laying here right next to me, taking a snooze here. And so we thought we'd try something new with her this evening, and we took her into the restaurant with us, because at the restaurant that we...
Oh, you mean the Cracker Barrel?
At the Cracker Barrel,
yeah.
where we had some dinner. Actually, we had breakfast for dinner. You can bring your dog in a Cracker Barrel.
And we didn't
barrel.
Know that. Huh?
No.
And we've gone here before with Desi, and we've always mm-hmm. left her in the RV, and they said, hey, we're pet friendly, so we brought her in.
Yeah. And
but
and she's very well behaved.
Yeah, she is.
And she likes everybody. But Desi has just decided to learn to talk. So Desi was trying to talk to everybody, and everybody didn't want to be spoken to while they were eating. So
Desi got such a great voice, though. She is kind of a pain in the butt.
She had a quick trip back to the RV.
But you know, you got to say something nice about the Cracker Barrel staff in Las Cruces. They were so nice. They said, you don't have to take her back in. She's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and, but, you know, Desi, she doesn't bark. You know, she's like, woo, 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 like she's trying to get some. You said it. You know, you've never seen a dog, and it's really true of all the dogs we've had. We've never had a dog that tries to communicate as much as Desi does.
She does. She tries to tell you exactly what she wants, and we're just dumb old humans, and we just don't get it. Well, this dog is ready to go to bed, and so am I.
Well, it's still raining outside, so let's take advantage of that and get everybody to bed.